You're listening to a Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders 30th Anniversary Podcast. Founded in 1978, GLAAD is New England's leading legal rights organization dedicated to ending discrimination based on sexual orientation, HIV status, and gender identity and expression. For more information and updates on GLAAD's current legal work, visit us at glaad.org.
Throughout most of his high school years in the late 1970s, Aaron Frick didn't know anyone who was openly gay. In his hometown of Cumberland, Rhode Island, a small, mostly Roman Catholic town 20 miles north of Providence, growing up gay meant fear and suspicion from adults, including teachers and school administrators, and bloody noses from students in the hallway. Ostracized and often harassed, Aaron struggled to be accepted and to accept himself. Aaron's struggle culminated in a landmark act of rebellion, asking a boy to his junior prom. But actually attending the prom would require nothing less than a federal court order. GLAAD's 1980 victory, Frick v. Lynch, is a milestone in protecting the rights of LGBT students. GLAAD founder John Ward and co-counsel argued that Cumberland High School's refusal to let Aaron bring a same-sex date violated his First Amendment rights of association and free speech, and his 14th Amendment right to equal protection. Aaron describes his adolescence in Cumberland as a pretty lonely existence, but typical of growing up gay in a small town with few out gay people. He struggled to make friends and to find people who understood him.
Where do I begin? I had a lot of trouble with phys ed class. I remember just having trouble with the jocks in the locker room. I just get... my stuff would be spit on, all kinds of insane stuff. Stuff that seems like a dream, like somebody spray painting gay on my house, and my father saying, if you're going to be like that, then you're not going to be able to live under my roof and stuff like that. Just really frightening things, really just a pretty scary existence.
Then in 1978, Aaron met Paul Gilbert, another student at Cumberland High School. Paul was a year older than Aaron and, remarkably, openly gay. Paul was a revelation. He debunked myths and stereotypes Aaron struggled with. He read gay community news. He had gay friends.
I had known him earlier, but we became friends around fall of 78. And he was really way ahead of his time. I mean, he was active with the NGLTF back then, National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. He was manning the phone lines and stuff, and he really just was a bridge to the real world from Cumberland, Rhode Island, to the real world. He was great. He was everything that you'd want in a gay friend when you're a kid.
In Paul, Aaron had a friend and mentor. In fact, Aaron says it was Paul who first decided to attend prom in 1979. Paul got as far as a hearing with the Cumberland School Committee, but at 17, he was a minor and needed his parents' support to press the issue legally. They refused. After the story broke in the news, Paul was harassed at school. Some students spit on him. One slapped him across the face. Eventually, Paul had to be chaperoned on his way from class to class. Finally, Paul's parents kicked him out of the house. He left Cumberland High School and disappeared to New York.
The thing was that Paul didn't have a chance to graduate. Paul was run out on a rail. It was his junior year, and he just had to leave town. And this was, a disservice to everybody, not just Paul, but to the students, too, that the teachers were in class talking about what had happened, which is, important that they do. This was a topical issue. But what they were saying was just so Neanderthal. They were saying that he had lost, that, of course, what was right had prevailed, and homosexuals are not going to be taking over our prom. And I'm sitting there listening to this stuff, thinking, really? Now, the year before, I would have been like, prom, who gives a crap? I wouldn't want to go, just because I want nothing to do with, any kind of social event with school. But then I realized, wait a minute, this is a matter of making a statement. These people are just being misled.
What others saw as a loss for Paul, Aaron saw as unfinished business. Paul hadn't had a real chance to fight. Given his age, he had no legal standing. Given his parents' attitudes, he had no support.
if not for Paul, this is not something I really talked about a lot back then, but if not for Paul, I would not have gone to the prom. I mean, I saw him, like, run out of town. His parents threw him out. You know what I mean? And everybody saw this as a failure, as a loss. And that wasn't the truth. You know, there was never even a chance to question the issue in court. So, I mean, the truth be known, I would not have gone to that prom. I would have nothing to do with proms. It was really about making a statement and dancing at the prom.
In fact, there were other reasons for wanting to go to the prom, as Aaron later wrote in his memoir, Reflections of a Rock Lobster, a story about growing up gay. Throughout high school, he'd been singled out, left out, and he was tired of it. He wanted to be part of a group, to share a rite of passage with his classmates. Also, he wrote, he wanted to make a political statement to his classmates about his dignity and value as a human being. Attending the prom on his terms was a declaration of equality. John Ward, who had started GLAAD just 2 years before, remembers meeting Aaron in May 1980, before they went to court.
Well, he was just this slender little boy, you know, with this incredible courage and determination. And funny, he was so funny. We were on this television show together, and shortly before the prom, I think, after the court and before the prom. And the guy in the television, this is late at night, the guy in the television says, well, the Bishop of Providence says that he wishes that you wouldn't do this because there could be violence and so forth and so on. Aaron says, well, you know, the bishop would say anything to get his name in the newspapers. So he was just this total iconoclast.
That was May 10th, 1980, and Aaron had decided to take up Paul's fight just weeks before. First, he had walked into the principal's office and said he wanted to take a boy to the prom. The principal, Richard Lynch, said no. Next, Aaron came out to his parents. Finally, he needed a prom date. He asked Paul. Aaron knew he was in for a fight. He called the local affiliate of NGLTF and spoke with an attorney named Jack Gaffney. Gaffney connected Aaron to John Ward at GLAAD, who said he'd take Aaron's case. Local Rhode Island attorney Lynette Labinger was co-counsel. The media ran with the story as soon as it broke. As in Paul's case, news spread quickly through town.
Just right a couple of days after it hit the news, there was one junior student here, you know, behind me who punched me, just sucker punched me, while we were walking from class to class. And that was the worst, you know, non-support moment there was. The rest of it was just the students were really supportive. The student council went to court and came up to me afterward and said, hope you win. And it was really not at all what the principal was saying. You know, he was saying that they were going to riot and they were going to become violent if they saw two men dancing together or embracing, God forbid.
Just 10 days before the prom, on May 21st, John Ward argued the case before Judge Raymond Patin in Federal District Court in Providence. The courtroom filled with supporters, including the entire Cumberland High School Student Council, a few of Aaron's friends, and, most importantly, his father. The two-day hearing included testimony from only two witnesses, Aaron and Principal Lynch. Lynch reiterated the arguments he had put forward in a letter to Aaron, refusing his request to attend prom with a same-sex date. First, Lynch said, he needed to protect Aaron from the other students. He argued that there was, quote, a real and present threat of physical harm to Aaron and his date. John Ward.
Yeah, I mean, that was the sort of the one that they thought would have the juice. You know, we don't really hate you, we just don't want you to get hurt. But there's all these cases about heckler's veto. You know, you can't give the heckler the ability to stop your thing. You know, the state has a duty to protect you when you're exercising your First Amendment rights.
But Lynch's testimony showed his prejudice.
You know, our lawyer, John Ward, asked him, well, how do you feel about two women dancing? And he was fine with that. That was okay. But not two men. And then, of course, you know, John Ward asked him why. Why not two men? He didn't know. He was like, I don't know, but that's the way it is. And, you know, that's one of the big reasons I think they lost, because it was like hypocrisy and nothing to back it up.
Lynch also said that Aaron's classmates, other students, even the town itself, would be harmed by, quote, overt homosexual interaction at a class function. Third, Lynch said, since the prom would be held in Massachusetts, not Rhode Island, he couldn't ensure student safety, specifically Aaron's safety, if there was violence. Ward argued that Lynch's refusal to let Aaron bring a male date to the prom violated Aaron's First and 14th Amendment rights. Bringing and dancing with a same-sex date were expressive actions, he said, and therefore protected under the U.S. Constitution. Ward had reason to hope for a just outcome. Judge Patin had a reputation for fairness. 4 years before the Frick case, Patin had decided a pioneering gay rights case allowing a pride assembly at the old State House in Providence. John Ward.
Well, there was also a great First Circuit case about dancing, gay students of the University of New Hampshire versus somebody, that had happened like in 1974, where they upheld the right of gay students to do same-sex dancing at a University of New Hampshire dance. Or maybe it was to have a dance of their own. In any event, it was about upholding the right to same-sex dancing. And so, you know, that was a case from the same circuit, and, you know, it just felt like the law stuff felt really good, you know. And it was Patin who was, you know, was like this very progressive judge. He had done all these draft cases and all these abortion cases, so we knew that he wanted to do it, and he was afraid that there'd be violence.
Just 3 days before the prom, on May 28th, 1980, Judge Patin issued an injunction allowing Aaron to attend prom with Paul. Even a legitimate interest in school discipline does not outweigh a student's right to peacefully express his views in an appropriate time, place, and manner, he wrote. To rule otherwise would completely subvert free speech in the schools by granting other students a heckler's veto, allowing them to decide through prohibited and violent methods what speech will be heard. The First Amendment does not tolerate mob rule by unruly schoolchildren. Patin also acknowledged that it was a sensitive issue and that norms and attitudes towards homosexuality were changing. Still, he wrote, all that an individual judge can do is to apply the legal precedents as accurately and as honestly as he can, uninfluenced by personal predilections or the fear of community reaction. It was a victory for Aaron on a couple of levels. It wasn't just that now he could attend prom with Paul. Patin was also saying that Aaron attending prom with a same-sex date, essentially making a public statement that he was gay, was important enough that it was protected by the First Amendment.
You know, he's talking about First Amendment rights, not just two guys dancing at the prom. He's talking about First Amendment rights. And Mr. Lynch is saying two guys dancing at the prom is going to cause violence, and that kind of speech is not protected. And Judge Patin says, yes, it is. That's the exact kind of free speech that is protected. That's why we have the First Amendment, not to protect speech that everybody agrees with, but to protect the kind that will cause an argument. And you know what I mean? That was really so good that, you know, he was way ahead of his time. He wasn't stuck on the gay issue. It was about making a statement. And ultimately, the statement was that we were going to dance together. You know, we weren't going to go and be gay. We were going to show that we were gay by dancing. And that's why I think it's timeless. We won the right to dance, you know. And dancing is such a big part of gay culture. And so I'm really proud of that.
Aaron and Paul, in complimentary blue tuxedos, attended the Cumberland High School prom together on May 31st, 1980. Six policemen were assigned to the event, but Aaron says no one caused trouble.
Mr. Lynch had totally underestimated those kids. It was really supportive. I think Paul got one dirty look from somebody, and he had told me about it. I had a great time. He had a great time. You know, the kids had formed like a receiving line and started just like shaking our hands and congratulating us and then taking pictures with us. They kind of formed a ring around us when we slow danced and just like were, you know, aghast or whatever. I wasn't paying too much attention to them. I had my eyes closed. So it felt, you know, I had a chance to prepare for it and say, you know, Paul asked me to slow dance. And I was like, let's go. So yeah, it was great.
Later, they danced to Rock Lobster, the B-52 song for which Aaron named his memoir. It wasn't until years later that Aaron fully realized the courage it took to do what he and Paul had done.
Oh my God, this is the thing. When I look back on that time, you know, now being much older, I can talk about some of the fear I had, I guess. There was some. I mean, when I think that I was prepared to die that night, You know, really, I never talked about that back then, and really, just, you know, that would be kind of a buzzkill. But it's true, I was ready to die. I was such a little gay warrior. But I think it's worth, again, I wasn't prepared to die for the prom. I was prepared to die for the First Amendment. So, you know, I'm okay with that. But luckily I didn't die, and a good time was had by all.
In fact, it was also a defining moment for John Ward.
And I mean, I was very nervous about how it was going to go, and it went fine. You know, it just went fine. That was, I think, the first time that I really felt like I was in the big leagues. You know, we were being taken seriously. There was a lot of publicity, and Aaron was on the Phil Donahue show. And I mean, actually, one of the things that really happened that was very moving to me was all these people, all these kids, teenage kids, like 14, 15, 16, wrote to Aaron, and the letters all came to my office, you know, and it was like all these kids in Kansas saying, oh, you know, I want to do what you did. I mean, it was like a huge consciousness shift, I think, for a lot of kids who had felt totally isolated, and here was this kid that did this thing.
Nearly 30 years later, Aaron is living in San Francisco. He lost track of Paul in the mid-1990s after they both appeared on the Bertice Barry show to talk about the case. Despite the legal and cultural advances for LGBT people in the decades since Aaron and Paul's prom, students are still fighting to be recognized and respected. Most recently, two high school girls in Scottsboro, Alabama, a publicly funded school district, won the right to attend prom together after the school superintendent refused. Aaron isn't surprised that students continue to struggle.
I don't think growing up gay is so much different these days. I'm sure it's just as difficult and just as rewarding and wonderful, too. And in fact, actually, I'm still growing up gay. You know, that's something else I wanted to make a point of saying, that you don't just stop growing up gay after, you know, you graduate from high school. Growing up gay is something you do your whole life, I think.
Thank you for listening to this GLAAD 30th Anniversary Podcast. Visit GLAAD.org to learn more about this story and to download a new podcast on the 15th of every month.
Special thanks to Tim Wilson at the San Francisco Public Library and to writer Patrick Hines for their help with research.